Hello, and welcome to Silver Threads, a weekly program of information on how you can make your senior year shine. I'm Kathy Van Skoik. A good friend of mine is about to have her second book published. Elizabeth has been writing since she was a child, but it wasn't until 2011, when she was 65, that her first book about her Irish heritage was published. Another friend, Jenny, has self-published two books since she turned 70. It's never too late to follow your muse if you have ever had any thoughts about writing, be it novel, historical novel, memoir, poetry. Today, I'll be highlighting the lives of two authors who have had their first successes in their 8th and 9th decades. First, from the March-April issue of 55 Plus magazine, Grease Woman publishes first novel at 73, and from the January issue of Finger Lakes Times, From the Big Apple to Hollywood at 101, Lyons Resident is full of stories. Grease Woman publishes first novel at 73 by Anne J. Albertini. Judith Byrne, 74, of Grease, had always wanted to write a book. This fall, her dream came true when she self-published her first novel. I was just always thinking that it was my destiny. It's like a drive that was inside of me. The novel, published under pen name J.A. Goodman, Tangled Justice, an Emma Mason Mystery, is available for sale at the createspace.com, the self-publishing division of Amazon, Barnes & Noble website, or you can borrow it from the Grease Public Library. Burns also has several short stories published on seniorsinc.com, a website for senior citizen authors. Tangled Justice follows police detective Emily Mason as she tries to track down a psychopathic killer who is terrorizing the streets of Rochester. When she's not tracking the serial killer, Mason keeps busy with her boyfriend, Peter, who becomes a suspect in the murder of his partner in London. As the novel unfolds, these two stories intertwine. It's a Columbo-style mystery where you initially meet the criminal, see the crime, and then follow the detectives as they try to piece together what happened, Burns told 55 Plus recently. I created 48 characters, and since it was a murder mystery about a serial killer, I also ended some of their lives as easily as I created them. I found I had a flair for murder. Thankfully, only as an author, she joked. The fact that it came out as a murder mystery surprised me, she said, adding that she always thought her book would be funny and inspirational. But then I started my first chapter talking about criminals, and it just continued on from there. What surprised me is how my mind worked to comprehend an intricate and complex set of clues that I could put down on paper. It's probably because I'm OCD. In addition to obsessive-compulsive disorder, Burns also has been diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, and dyslexia. The key to coping with these disabilities is being aware of them, she said. You come to realize that if you have a problem, someone else probably has it too. The built-in spell and grammar check on her computer are a big help too, correcting misspellings, but also adjusting words that she typed in the wrong order, said Burns. I don't know what I would do without a computer. The computer has also been an asset for research, she said. Research was a big part of the process because it was important to her that the story be believable and realistic. For example, Burns said she wanted to make sure she had the details on police investigative procedures correct, so she called the county medical examiner's office to learn the procedure for what happens when no one claims a dead body. She also took a tour of the crime lab. I wanted to make sure I had it right when I wrote who would be at the crime scene and who would be at the crime lab. A lifelong resident of the Rochester area, Burns wrote her book as a celebration of the city and the surrounding area. I truly love the city. Characters visit local attractions like the Lilac Festival, where they see Tommy and the Tremors, which is a real band that includes her son-in-law, and the Scenic Byway, and local businesses like J.F. Jones Jewelers. Burns said she always loved to read and write. I loved to tell and retell stories that lived in my imagination as well as my actual life. Sometimes the two would become intertwined, and as my children often complained, I lost sight of reality. I found that I had a natural skill, or some call it a gift, for making the ordinary sound extraordinary. My children call it a curse when I tell a story about them and I add humorous twists to the story. Burns said she first started writing a book when she was 8 years old, The Bobbsey Twins in Canada, which was inspired by the family's yearly trips to Canada and her love of the Bobbsey Twins. Even at that tender age, I knew to write about what you knew. I wrote in a spiral notebook, and though I never completed the book, I did hold on to that notebook before sadly losing it. It would be several years before she would get back to writing a book. Burns had always planned on going to college right after high school, but her mother died while she was a senior in high school, and she had to put those plans on hold. After graduating from Shalott High School in 1960, Burns got a job as teller at the Genesee Valley Union Trust. Then she married and started a family. For 10 years, she was a stay-at-home mother. For a time, she also ran a small business. Burns wanted her children to have ponies. To help cover the cost of keeping the ponies, she started Pony Parties, which rented out the ponies for children's birthday parties. When her youngest child started school, she divorced her husband. Tasked with raising her four children on her own, she got a job on the production line at Kodak. Eventually, she worked her way up to be a quality control technician. In 1989, Kodak offered a buyout, which included paying for education. It was a good opportunity that came my way, and I took it. She enrolled in Monroe Community College and graduated 2 years later with distinction, with an associate's degree in marketing and a 4.0 GPA. She's awarded the Academic Achievement for Excellence and was initiated into the Phi Theta Kappa Society. In 2004, Burns and her granddaughter, Amanda, took a creative writing class at MCC with Professor Chris Perry. She wrote a short story for the class about a conversation in an alley. Perry said it would make a great beginning to a book, and he wanted an autographed copy when it was published. Burns promised him an autographed copy of the book. "It took me 9 years, but I kept my promise," she said. It was a creative writing class at the Rochester Institute of Technology's Osher Lifelong Learning Institute that provided the spark to get her working to fulfill her long life dream. "I got a lot of encouragement from my classmates to do something with my talents. I just kind of thrived with all that encouragement. It gave me the confidence that I could actually do this." A year and a half ago, she started devoting mornings to writing, and last fall, she finally got the chance to self-publish her own book. As she wrote, she shared her work with classmates. "They provided me with different perspectives and different points of view that my readers would have. They helped me broaden my writing. For example, Jean, a friend of the main character Emma, approaches a man she's interested in at the Lilac Festival, which Burns' classmate at Osher, many of whom were married or widowed, didn't think was realistic. There are definitely differences in the way a married woman and a single woman have lived their life," she said. Burns, who has been single since the 1970s, realized she needed to add more context to explain that times have changed since the 1950s and that it's a common thing now for a woman to approach a man. Burns attends in Osher, a member-led organization that offers academic, social, and cultural programs to enrich and inspire adult learners 50 and older. "It's a way to meet new people, get exposed to new ideas, and develop new friendships," she said. "That's kind of a secret of keeping your mind keen. It's to surround yourself with people smarter than you, more talented than you. It just keeps you on your toes." Once the first draft of Tangled Justice was complete, friends helped her edit the piece and give additional feedback. Her daughter was a big help throughout the whole process. Byrne said she provided editing as well as needed encouragement to continue. The hardest part about writing the book was having the discipline to sit and do the writing every day, she said. And once the book was written, I was really surprised at how much work still had to be done. For about 6 months, she was in contact with a small local publisher, but after not making much progress, she decided to self-publish. She saw an article in 55 Plus featuring author Mary Doherty, who runs Bootstrap Publishing, which helps other authors self-publish. Burns connected with Doherty, who helped with much of the behind-the-scenes work of getting a book published, like writing an author's bio, arranging for art for the front and rear cover, and getting other writers to give testimonials about the book. Burns is retired, but she keeps busy. When she's not writing or spending time with her 4 children, 9 grandchildren, and 6 great-grandchildren, she volunteers for several local organizations, including the Rochester Visitors Bureau, the LPGA, the Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and townwide cleanup efforts. She's also volunteered for the Special Olympics when it came to Brockport, and for Beep Baseball, a baseball program for blind children. Her passion for volunteerism is something she inherited from her parents, she said. Burns's father, Leo Goodman, a contractor, was also a volunteer fireman and involved in the local business association, where he championed the idea of building Park Ridge Hospital, which is now known as Unity Hospital. Burns is already working on the follow-up to Tangled Justice, which she hopes to have out in June. And once that novel is finished, Burns will get started on a 3rd novel in the series. Each of the books follows the life of the characters, but each has a distinctly different murder for the reader to investigate, she said. I like to incorporate surprise twists and turns and surprise endings. And now from the Finger Lakes Times, from the Big Apple to Hollywood, at 101 Lyons Resident is full of stories, by Susan Clark Porter. Mary Simpson Smart has no surefire answer why she's made it to her 101st birthday. Perhaps it's because, unlike her 2 sisters, she never smoked, or maybe it's good genes. Her paternal grandfather lived to be 98. That was an era when death often came much earlier. According to family lore, her grandpa died only after breaking his leg while climbing a log fence. The greatest clue to Smart's longevity, though, may lie in her optimism and positive attitude. I've been well treated. I'm very lucky, Smart said recently at her country home, as a wood fire blazed nearby. I embraced the life I was in. For her, there has been, oh, so much to embrace. Her life has spanned the city and country, the East and West coasts, freewheeling singles times and marriage and motherhood. Smart went to Wellesley College. She worked in New York City and Los Angeles, including a stint as the personal secretary for actress Joan Fontaine. She left the life of Hollywood in 1948 when her father suffered a cerebral hemorrhage, returning home to Lyons to help her mother care for him. She's been here ever since. It's a rare to encounter a 101-year-old person, and even rarer to experience one who can clearly recount her life's trajectory with energy and wit. Smart was born on December 26, 1915, at 65 Broad Street in Lyons, to Dr. R. Spencer Spence Simpson and his wife, Tusnelda Neusbickle Simpson. She was the middle of 3 daughters. I had a very happy childhood. It's great having a doctor in the house, she joked. Her father founded the Lyons Hospital and ran it for 35 years. Her mother, also a Wellesley College graduate in 1904, was an active community member and suffragette. Smart recalls being part of a parade in Lyons when women finally got the right to vote. We all wore white, and my mother and sister were in this rickety car, she said. At Wellesley, Smart served as editor of the Wellesley Review. It proved to be a prescient of her lifelong interest in writing. After her 1937 graduation, she spent a summer learning shorthand before heading to New York City to work for Time Incorporated as a secretary. She also worked for two well-known playwrights of the era, Clifford Odets and Zoe Akins. As a single woman in New York before World War II, Smart enjoyed all of the city had to offer, including regular nights out to hear Count Basie, Duke Ellington, and trumpeter Charlie Shavers, whom she especially admired. She made it to the 1939 World's Fair in Flushing Meadows, where she ate 20-set hot dogs and ordered an Emmer Pecan cocktail for her father. Her dad initially declared it swamp water, but soon ordered another after its effect took place. "I had a wonderful time," she said. "I fell in with some theatrical people who were handing out playbills." In 1943, pitchforked out of New York by the war, as she described it, Smart decided to head to Hollywood and pursue her dream of writing. "I always went for it. I made my own way," she said. That way started in the Steno pool of RKO Studios, one of the top studios during Hollywood's golden age. Smart still had a studio telephone directory with her name on it to prove it. Her whirlwind of stories from that time illustrate how movie making has changed. Her first job was taking dictation for writer Ben Holmes, who was penning a screenplay about a talking dog. She laughed so hard that he specifically asked for her again, she said. Smart talked about two-reelers and banner projection screens with mountain scenery. At that time, there was no flying to Switzerland for on-location scenes. The actors simply stood in front of the screen and the filming began. Smart worked her way up from the Steno pool to a permanent gig in the front office and was secretary to William Dozier, a producer who bought stories and hired writers, and, according to his Wikipedia profile, was executive producer and narrator of the Batman television series. She did more than answer his phone, however. "I would often take over interviews on stories he was bored with," she said. It was through Dozier that Smart landed her most glorious assignment, that of personal secretary and shopper to actress Joan Fontaine, Dozier's wife at the time. Fontaine starred in several Hitchcock films and won an Academy Award for her role in his movie Suspicion. Lying on Smart's dining room table were two small mementos from Fontaine, a pink polka-dotted scarf and mink hat. "They were," Smart said, "some of the things she tossed at me when she was tired of them." As Fontaine's secretary, Smart also served as her personal shopper and social manager. She reminisced about trips to New York City where she was outfitted in elegant clothes and a $50 purse in order to fit in with her Hollywood boss. "I looked like an heiress," Smart said. She recalled lunch on embroidered linen tablecloths and eating the same scrumptious meals as Fontaine. She would return from shopping trips with armloads of clothes for Fontaine. "Then I returned most of them." She found Fontaine both genteel and hardworking and coordinated. Smart said she made a hole-in-one on the golf course, studied French, and could often be heard practicing her lines. She was a very talented actress, Smart said. She was an intelligent and beautiful woman. That Hollywood life came to an abrupt end when Smart returned to Lyons in 1948 to help with her ailing father. The silver lining in coming home appeared in the form of William Smart, a reserved man a few months older than Mary. Although they were nearly the same age and both were Lyons natives, the two did not know each other. "Being a country boy, I had never met him," Smart said. They married in 1949 and moved to a cobblestone home in the country that had been built by Smart's ancestors in 1833. There was no running water or electricity, but the couple updated it and made it into a home. William Smart ran Smart's Agway service. Mary thrust herself into raising their two children, Stuart, a retired EMT who lives in Lyons, and Sarah, a social worker involved in hospice care who resides in the Boston area. She led their Girl Scout and Boy Scout troops, started a nursery school, and nourished her writing interest by doing publicity for myriad community clubs, including the Lyons Civic Club, Lyons Heritage Society, and the Wayne County Historical Society. Smart recognizes that the life of child-rearing, canning fruits and vegetables, and making her own bread and yogurt, she still does that today thanks to a bread maker, was a big leap from her New York and Hollywood days. No matter, it seems that whatever stage of life she is in, she yields to the moment and gives it her all. A sustaining project for many years was the research and writing associated with her book, A Flight with Fame, The Life and Art of Frederick McMonnies. It was published in 1996 by Soundview Press when Smart was 81 years old. The writing of the 342-page book was launched by a Lyons friendship. Smart called Louise Rice one of her best friends, and McMonnies, an American sculptor in the Beaux-Arts school tradition, just happened to be Rice's grandfather. "She knew nothing about him," said Smart, who made it her mission to learn about him. The project married her interest in art and writing, and she spent years researching original documents and traveling, including trips to New York City and Paris, where McMonnies lived, sometimes accompanied by her husband and son. "It was chance," she said. "I finally got my topic after knocking around Hollywood. It was a wonderful hobby." Even though Smart had a story, Shaw's Law, published in Woman's Day in 1950, her book was her crowning literary achievement, she said. She called it her one solid success. "I had lots of other failures, but it was fun doing them." Her literary bent is well known in Lyons and has been documented for decades. A 1965 Geneva Daily Times news item notes that not only would Smart be leading a book review of Saul Bellow's novel Herzog, but also that she was judge for the Hoffman Historical Essay Contest, authored a booklet for the Wayne County Courthouse, Centennial, and a play for the Civic Club's Golden Anniversary Banquet. After reading the McMonnies book, Larry Ann Evans, executive director of the Museum of Wayne County History, sought Smart out. Evans knew Smart through her son and his wife, Ann Salerno, but also through her mother, the late artist Ann Collins Evans. Collins Evans and Smart were friends from the good old days in Lyons, Larry Ann Evans said. After her mother died, Evans said she enlisted Smart's help in putting together a booklet that chronologically lists her mother's paintings. "Personally, I just think she's an incredible woman and has an incredible life, and she continues to go strong," Evans said. "She's so sweet and interesting and so quick-witted, too." Pat Gorthy, another friend who lives in Lyons, said she and her husband enjoyed dinners and outings with Smart and her husband before he died in 2002. She recalled a visit to Sodus Point, complete with tea in a silver teapot and sandwiches Gorthy had prepared. "We shared tea and sandwiches and we watched the beautiful lake," Gorthy said. She's never forgotten that. Gorthy said she and Smart share a love of old houses. Gorthy's home was built in 1858 and history, calling her a wonderful friend. "She's just a fascinating woman. I've always loved her," said Gorthy, who wishes she had known Smart when she was younger. "She's just so warm and so loving and always happy to hear from me. I don't remember ever hearing her complain of anything, really. She's a marvelous person and has led a very interesting life. And she's a pleasure to be around. Don't we all wish we were 100 and that we could be like that?" At 90, Smart said she felt herself slowing down, figuring, boy, the end is coming. But it didn't. 11 years later, her hearing has diminished, yet she still reads and has a computer and iPad. She gushes about the internet, especially the Google search engine, which she often consults when trying to remember lyrics to a song that has stuck in her head. For her 100th birthday, her daughter cooked a dinner for 20. Smart called it a big event and a jamboree. Her most recent birthday was more low-key. Smart, her son, and his wife enjoyed a December 26 lunch at the McGee Diner in nearby Tyre and a drive-by tour of the new Del Lago Resort and Casino project. "I'm in bed by 7 or 8, so you've got to take me when you can get me," she said. "Although grateful for her health, I'm very, very lucky I'm not drooling," she said. Smart finds herself in the unusual position of outliving most of her friends and relatives, making her birthdays a little bittersweet. "Everyone I know has passed on," she said. "It's a very strange perspective I have in life. It's a mixed blessing." Well, as a short postscript, also in the issue of 55 Plus is the article written by Deborah Blackwell about Fairport, New York resident Jean Gehertz and her new published book, her first book written for adults, The Truth About Daniel. It's the story of the controversial brother of famous suffragist Susan B. Anthony. The book, while reflecting her goal of helping to make life better for others, is ironically timely in the undercurrent of turmoil in our country today. Because Daniel was controversial, she was inspired to explore his historical significance, traveling as far as Leavenworth, Kansas, and Martha's Vineyard for research and documentation. The book about Daniel Reed Anthony, while full of history, is really about relationships and family, and exploring questions about maintaining a strong family bond, even when disagreeing. In part, those questions are answered by the book's dedication to family, who pester you until you get it right. Gerhardt, a Susan B. Anthony imposter, a naturopath, a reflexologist, a massage therapist, and a teacher of aquatic fitness for seniors, also wrote a book about Susan B. Anthony for children, which is used in many Rochester school classrooms. She says she is intrigued and inspired by the quote, "Be the change you want to see in the world. If I see a need and know that I can help fill it, I swing into action." Inspiration for all of us, I would say. I hope you have enjoyed hearing about these elder authors. Thanks for listening, and until next week, I'm Kathy Van Skoik. You've been listening to Silver Threads, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. The audio producer for the show is Maureen Rich, and I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I hope you will join me again next week for more information and updates for making the best of your silver years. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.